Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsok.
I continue to be Joseph Scrimshaw.
And I will always be Jennifer Landa.
Said like a true Jedi. I will always be Jennifer Landa. Hey, everybody. We're here to talk Star Wars news, breaking news from a long time ago. And that includes some news that I saw pop off last night when I was getting ready to turn on video games, zone out, and just fall asleep on a couch. We're going to throw it all into the news blender here in a bit. Before we do that, we're going to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, we have our 4Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us, and maybe we should finally read or listen to ourselves. A lot going on. We like to catch up with life for Star Wars Adventures. Jen, you are always out and about in the world, raising children, raising dogs, making magic happen on TikTok. What's going on?
This week, I finally got my Grogu that I had ordered from Target with opposable legs. And I was so excited. He's currently on our little sideboard table in our dining area. And apparently, I'm the only one that's excited about him.
Wow. That's good.
My kids could care less. I'm like, look, his legs move. He has these cute little feet. Look at his little body. Like, I'm trying to show them and getting them excited. My 7-year-old's like, and my three-year-old's like, eh. And literally 5 minutes later, they start playing with the other Grogu, which is the more expensive one that you can, you know, pat its head and it moves and it moves its arms and makes all these great noise. It's just a little bit more interactive, that one. But that's also the one that my three-year-old, like, literally cut his ears with scissors. So why, yeah, so I had hoped that this one could kind of be more, like, fun for them to do their imaginative play instead of the more expensive one. But that's not, they want more interactive Grogu. As
they're acting out of a Reservoir Dogs. Yeah, like cutting the ears off.
Yes, yes. So, but I am going to go to Build-A-Bear and I'm going to go get Grogu a new outfit. I'm going to give him a makeover and I'm going to try and make him more enticing for my kids. I think they're just kind of over it because they have so many Grogu's. They're like, yeah, another one.
Time's moved on.
That's what I was wondering is, like, are they like, Mom, Grogu's been over merchandise. Will you please get us an Andor plushie?
They're showing me with their response to it. I mean, we don't have that many, but we do have quite a few Grogu's. So I think I might like get him a cute little dress or something, or I know I'm going to record it. And I know some people may have some issue with, I'm going to really make him very cute. But I don't care.
No,
this is what I want to do.
This, you said you will always be Jennifer Landa, and what you're describing right now is the most Jennifer Landa thing I've ever heard.
I'm going to walk into Build-A-Bear, and I'm going to put him in his little satchel, which is amazing. I mean, it's a fantastic Grogu. If you're going to be Mandalorian, the Mandalorian this Halloween, you got to have this Grogu. It's perfect.
The Build-A-Bear one. Well, okay. Are there Build-A-Bear? What mall do you have to go to find a Build-A-Bear? They're all, I can't. Yeah.
Oh, exactly. I had to do some research. I think I'm going to have to go to Glendale.
Yeah. I think there used to be one at my old Northridge Mall, and I think it's still there. But yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
Glendale it up.
Not too many.
We're talking Valley Talk here, unfortunately.
A lot of malls. A lot of malls in Glendale.
Yes, so that'll be my mission this week.
There you go. Well, Joseph, I don't know if you were decorating and cuting up your Grogu's, but what's going on over there?
I did not cuten up my Grogu's. The only thing I've done recently with Grogu is I redid my action figure display on my coffee table, and I put the Porg right in front of Grogu, and I didn't mean to, and Grogu's arms are reaching out, so now it looks like Grogu is trying to eat the Porg.
Fair.
So I might need to change that up.
Yeah.
Yeah. A good week for the most part. Some ups and downs, definitely. And that was a part of my Star Wars adventure. Friday was a really hard day with some life stuff. And then doing the Force Center live Q&A on YouTube was great. Mm-hmm. It was really what I needed. It was just like a ton of fun. Lots of like great questions, great comments from the people watching. A lot of fun and funny questions, too. So that was just like a real bounce into the weekend. So I was really happy for that. I had mentioned on the Q&A, one of the things I did is I finally opened a Princess Leia action figure I've had for 5 years.
Nice.
Because I bought two of The Last Jedi, 3¾ Leia, and I opened that on Friday for Carrie Fisher's birthday. And that was also, you know, very helpful when I was having a challenging day. And this was one of the weekends where I made a lot of room for my Star Wars love, but also many other things. On Sunday was a big Doctor Who episode. I went to the James Bond in Motion exhibit at the Peterson Automotive Museum because it was closing. That was the second time I went back because I really loved it, and it was closing on Sunday, so I went back and did all sorts of different genre exploration. Including Ken, if I may, are you okay if I share our action figure story from the weekend?
Absolutely. Please do.
I ran into Target very quickly. My wife was waiting in the car. I was getting just some absolute basic needs, but my wife totally knows and is supportive that I'm going to stop in the action figure aisle first. And I found a Boba Fett that I really wanted, so that was great. And then I saw an action figure of the Baroness from G.I. Joe. Mm-hmm. And they're putting out the great sort of retro style, so they kind of look like they did generally in the 80s. I have never seen even 1 second of G.I. Joe, but I'm fascinated by the design of Baroness. And I was like, I'm 99% sure that Ken really likes this character. I think I remember talking about it. I just had this overwhelming desire of like, I want to buy this action figure. And if I can actually buy it for a friend, that would be great. So I was texting my wife about the proper spinach to buy, and I was texting Ken if I could buy him Baroness. And I was really glad that I remembered to text the correct people between spinach and Baroness, and I did. So Baroness is sitting in the apartment waiting to be united with Ken.
Oh, I cannot wait for this. Yeah, it was a great text to get. And of all the times, you know, we communicate, we just hear each other's voice more than anything. I think there's only been one time I received a text that was meant for Sarah, and it was like, see you soon, love you, honey, or something. I was like, wow, this podcast is going great. So it was great to get that. Yes, can't wait.
Yeah, I'm very excited. Very excited about that. So, yeah, that was my weekend and some of my Star Wars adventures.
Yeah, I've cleared some bulletin board space for that Baroness figure. One of my all-time favorite. If you want to know why I am often attracted to cold, distant goth women, that is it. Grace is not cold and distant, but over the course of history, that's been my life. That makes a lot of sense. No, can't wait for that. Yeah, for me, it was a big, the live Q&A on Friday was fun. And we'll say, we always get asked, when's Jen coming on? Jen, your place is secure there. Whenever, you know, your kids graduate college, you can have time to come on the show. But we always get asked about that. But we love doing them. It's a lot of fun. So that kind of sets the tone. And yeah, it was kind of a Game of Thrones, House of Dragon, Rings of Power discussion I did last Thursday too, kind of that week, weekend, spending time in that world. I did take time to finish my current stack of Star Wars comics, which only means I have to go this week back to Earth 2 and now Sherman Oaks to get the next stack of comics that I'll be behind. But it was a lot of fun. Some of the comics hit for me more than others. I really, as I said on the live show Friday, enjoy the Han and Chewie series going on right now. But even a character that's as wonderful as Aphra. I love Dr. Aphra. I sometimes think the stories are crazy. And if Andor is the grounded, gritty version of Star Wars, Aphra is the wild, crazy, high fantasy world at times. And in the middle of it, all is just this wonderful character. So it was fun for me to finish that run or get up to date on that. And then I've been keeping people updated on we even talked about, I think, Friday again, Joseph, my hat adventures. As everyone knows, for a long time, I had my Imperial Insignia hat, and then I've actually had a couple of them. You know, hats get dirty, even if you try to wash them. You gotta get a new one, and it was always easy to get. And then I switched my identity. So I just identify as a rebel more, and it means a lot. It's a fun story to tell, but it actually kind of means a lot. This is who I am now, and I wear this wonderful rebel hat I have on stage as a stand-up. And that hat has it's starting to get there. It's faded. It's a little loose. I was like, time to get a new hat. And I cannot find this hat to save my life. I can't.
Oh, no.
I can't. It's out. I went to superherogeekstuff.net.com, whatever. Out of it. Out of that site. And there's less of those places to do it now. A lot of the think geeks are gone, all that kind of stuff. Heroes and Villains doesn't have it. The problem I'm having is I have a big head. I have a large head. It not an ego. Well, you know, we're all in the business for some reason or other, right? That. But I have to special order sizes of hats. And this is a new era. Everyone out there who loves hats knows it's a new era. 3930, which is a flex fit, low profile hat. That makes my head not look as planet size as it is. And that is gone. It's out of print. It's out of stock. And then the only one that's placed is a Rebel Insignia that's orange. Who wears orange? I can't pull off orange. I can't do it. So this week I needed to run outside and I did not want to wear the hat. I'm trying to save the hat for stand-up stage now, stand-up stage appearances. Mm-hmm. I pulled out the Imperial hat and I wore it and it felt weird. Just didn't feel right. And it's not just a story I'm telling on a podcast. This is not who I am anymore. I don't know what to do, Joseph, Jennifer. I don't know what to do. Anyone have a hat for sale?
If my wife hears this, she's going to start looking on Etsy because that's what she does. Whenever I go, I just want a shirt that's just this. She's like, I'll find it.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to. I'm going to have to try too. Jen, can I craft one?
I mean, you could embroider it, but I'm terrible at embroidering. do some research too.
Yeah.
It's got to be out there. Although you're right. The think geeks and places like that are no longer in existence. And that was a place where I used to get a lot of my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know.
And I like a lot, like there's the Heroes and Villains company. I have a couple of their items. They were a sponsor in Jedi Council for a while. So we got sent a bunch of stuff. It was great. A lot of it, so I'm not talking bad about the company at all. A lot of the designs are just too much for me, man. They're too much for me. Like, I don't want a gold stormtrooper mask, shiny rhinestone hat. I just want something subtle, man. A white imperial, a white rebel logo.
I think you just also need to just keep saying this when your phone is nearby, or go on your phone and only Google hats and, you know, rebel insignia Star Wars.
Yeah.
And eventually the algorithm will be like, finally, we got him. And they'll start showing you ads for hats. Yeah. That's how I'm finding some of the action figures that I want, is that after trying lots of different things, the algorithm finally like, oh, we know how to get him.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. We're gonna figure this out. And then when I find it, I am going to order 5 hats, right? That's what I should have done when I bought this last one. I should have just swiped that credit card, get enough hats so you can have it for the rest of your life.
That is right.
All right. That's our Star Wars The Life Adventures. Getting into some news here. A couple items we're going to talk about up top, maybe a little less in depth. About what day is this now? About 5-6 days ago, Deadline reported that Michelle Rejwant steps down as the senior VP of development for live action programming for Lucasfilm. She's returning to a kind of an overall producer deal with Lucasfilm at Walt Disney. I say returning, she'd kind of come up in the ranks as a producer, associate producer for the JJ, working her way up there, produced 7 and I think credited as 9, and then got the big deal. So there's not much to this story. There's no replacement. She'll still be working, I think, at the same desk. They're just going to switch out the title card on the door, it seems like. And more information will come from this. She'll still be involved, still have EP and producing credits on a lot of the Star Wars projects coming out. Just seems like she'll be able to do other things. So any quick general thoughts, if you have it, Joseph, on this one?
Yeah, I think this one is one that generally falls under the speculate responsibly. I don't think it has a ton of meaning for direct Star Wars content, because it sounds like she'll still be doing the kind of producing work that she has been doing. Her name pops up a lot in the credits, and I think it will continue to, obviously. And I think probably stepping back to a producer role just means that she might be able to stretch her wings and do other things under the overall Disney umbrella as well.
Yeah, I agree with that there. There's a list of other, you know, internal candidates that we all think of, big names come to mind. I think someone like Rainn Roberts is you have to look at for kind of a secret weapon of that Lucasfilm development team. But Jen, any thoughts on her work so far, what you expect? And the nameplate change on the desk.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. I mean, yeah, I think that she's just going to have more creative freedom. I mean, I'm sure that she is talking with other teams and other creators and saying, I'd love to be a part of that. My plate's kind of full. Well, now maybe her plate is being able to take on other things. Because, as with any job, right, you sometimes get kind of tired of just only dealing with one thing. And maybe you want to talk about other things. Maybe you want to tell other types of stories under the Disney umbrella. But yeah, it's so interesting. I just was rewatching Andor the other night, and there was her name. So I'm sure she'll still be a presence amongst our Star Wars series and movies.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that could be it as well. Changing up. No crime for, going, hey, I kind of want to do some other things, too, that aren't related to Star Wars. Can I do that? Can I find a way to do that? Speaking of more Star Wars, this was the breaking news. Deadline reporting the exclusive that Damian Lindelof co-writing a Star Wars movie. Now, that's not necessarily new. That rumor had popped up, I think, March and springtime. We kind of heard that one. I love their stories of he's having lunch on the Disney lot. sure, absolutely. I've had lunch there, too. No one thought I was writing a Star Wars movie, I guess. Damon Lindelof, co-writing a Star Wars movie. We don't know the co-writer, but it seems, though, as though they've got a director attached. It is Sharmeen Obaid Chino, who was the director of Ms. Marvel for the MCU series that a lot of people loved. I'm not plugged in the MCU as much as others, but I heard great things, and that's a good thing. The reason for this is Lindelof wanted a director in early to get their voice into the project. This is the, I love this is being kind of referred to as Secret Star Wars movie. It's not in production yet. They are still writing, still developing. So that is fun. That's good news. I think now 10 years in to this era, I love hearing all the rumors and all the in-development stuff. I always kind of wait for more. But this is a fun story with some great names attached. Jen, any thoughts on this breaking news for us?
I'm very excited because, like you said, I mean, I'm not as plugged into the MCU, but I heard great things about Ms. Marvel. It's on my list to watch. And I like that, you know, Sharmeen, she is an Oscar-winning documentarian, first of all. Mm-hmm. So that's incredible. And she knows how to work within the Disney Plus space and kind of work within that framework of a franchise, which not all creators can do or feel comfortable in. She obviously does. So that is very exciting to me because I think that she's probably excited to work in Star Wars. Obviously, you know, Damon knows how to create write a great story. He also wrote Prometheus, mm-hmm. Star Trek Into Darkness, World War Z. So I think together, the two of them, I feel like they're both really hard workers. They're going to put their heads down. They're just going to crank this out. And I'm very excited about that. You know what I mean? They're not going to be speaking to blogs and whatever all the time. Yeah. I think they're just going to do the work and get it done. And it's going to be fantastic. And we're going to have it in theaters in 3-4 years.
Well, yeah, we get the 2025 date, the 2027 date, which, hey, those already have changed, too. Let's not forget a pandemic may have upset some of the movie productions as well. But yeah, we'll get it eventually. We'll get it.
Right.
We'll get it. Joseph, thoughts on this breaking news?
Yeah, I'm very excited about this and very intrigued by it. I think one of the, as always, we should probably give our disclaimer that none of their reps confirmed this. Lucasfilm mm-hmm. didn't confirm this. This is, you know, obviously a storied trade paper that you can probably trust their sources, but we should always say it's not confirmed. Assuming that it is, I really like some of the things that they say in the article. One quote in particular, given how proactive execs were in finding a director for this film, this Star Wars feature seems to have the most momentum out of all the films currently in development at the studio. Mm-hmm. So for me, and then there's this other quote. It says, sources add, it was important to Lucasfilm and Lindelof that a director be brought on so that person's own vision for where they see the story headed gets included in the script. That sounds great. That sounds like they're trying to get all of their ducks in a row so that they don't have the story of things being in development and then people leaving. But also, I'm really intrigued by the fact that Lucasfilm in general, Kathleen Kennedy in particular, in lots of interviews has been saying, on the film side, we're looking for somebody who's willing to make a commitment the same way Favreau has or Tony Gilroy has to kind of carving out this specific bit of storytelling. And I'm intrigued by the idea that Lindelof, since he was clearly on the project first and was wanting to look for a director, that Lindelof was in first, if Lindelof is possibly that person for the films. Because it certainly doesn't seem like it's Taiki Waititi.
Yeah.
You know, it's not Kevin Feige. It's not some of the other people who have films in development. Mm-hmm. Lindelof, though, might be in the position to go like, yeah.
Yeah.
I would be happy to, I'm not going to write and direct all of them, but I will kind of shepherd these new couple of films and see where they go and see how they're connected. Mm. So I'm really intrigued that if this might be that news. Big mites there. And then just looking at these two people, Lindelof is fascinating, right? Because he has a long history in the industry. He has taken so much heat for the end of Lost. He is no stranger to this. Read up on some of his things. He used to discuss the ending of Lost a bunch, and he made a public announcement. He's no longer going to talk about the end of Lost because he realizes he's not going to change anybody's mind or heart and soul. He very dramatically deleted his Twitter account as a promotion for his television show Leftovers right before it premiered and has never come back. I think he's a creator who understands fans, both the beauty and the wonder of fandom and also the intensity of it. Mm. So I think that he is somebody who is very well positioned to handle the storm, both positive and negative, that is Star Wars. You know, if anybody's listening and really dislikes the ending of Lost, I always respect people's opinions. I think it's one of those things that has become kind of a lightning rod of expectations. And that is one of the things that people, you know, dislike about Lindelof. But The Leftovers, his television show, was it didn't do amazing in the ratings, but it's a massive critical hit.
Yeah.
Massive critical acclaim. The most recent thing I saw Lindelof do was the Watchmen series. Again, massive critical acclaim, 95% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And that Watchmen show was amazing. As a fan of the graphic novel, I know there are the headline going around about the original writer of the graphic novel, Alan Moore, saying he was insulted by David Lindelof trying to contact him. But read any interview ever with Alan Moore. He is insulted by most things.
Yes.
And he's said since he wrote the graphic novel that he doesn't want anything to do with anybody else's adaptations of
it. Yeah.
That's not a super burn on Damon Lindelof. That's Alan Moore's position for decades.
Yeah.
On adaptations. Sorry, I'm kind of obsessed with this news, so I'll try to wrap it up here.
Go for it.
And then so Charmaine, I tried to look up the pronunciation of her name. I believe it's Obe Chinoy. I'm sure I'm not getting that entirely correct. She was one of multiple directors on Ms. Marvel, which I did watch, and it was great. I really liked it. I saw a couple of tweets already going, oh, all she's done is direct Ms. Marvel, and that is deeply incorrect. Yeah. Read the first page of her first paragraph of her Wikipedia entry. She has a very interesting background, multiple Academy and Emmy award-winning creator, a documentarian, a journalist. A lot.
Yeah.
A lot of incredibly impressive accomplishments, a lot of firsts.
Yeah.
But very cool. This is my I'm sorry, I'll wrap up. What's interesting to me about this is looking at what these two creators have been interested in most recently. Charmaine Obe Chinoy's entire career has been an interest in inequality, injustice, made an animated film about empowering young Pakistani women, won a journalism award for coverage of extremism. Those are really interesting Star Wars themes and ideas. And The Watchmen, that television show, was not another superhero thing. It was a deep dive on real issues of inequality and manipulated history. Mm-hmm. Because of the television show The Watchmen, a significant chunk of the population is now aware of the Tulsa Massacre that happened in I believe, 1921, that a lot of people are not taught and didn't know. It is an extremely aware show of socio-political issues. You're looking at two creators who have a long history of being interested in the Star Wars themes that tend toward inequality, extremism. I'm fascinated to see what they want to do in Star Wars.
Look, I wasn't going to stab you there, man. You hit a passionate strain, and I really think you brought some great information on why this project could be interesting. These two, what they've done individually, Joseph, the last couple of years, but then teaming up in Star Wars, we're in Andor season. We see what can happen when Star Wars just directly addresses very important socio-political issues. So I don't think that is something to overlook in this news. It's fun names from big projects, but what's behind it is important. So, Jen, I don't know if you agree with that or have a take
absolutely
on that, too.
Absolutely. Yes. I think it's just makes it more relevant to our world today. And I think it makes it sometimes cathartic to watch, right? And it also it just feels much more poignant. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to these two. I can't wait.
Yeah.
What a way to start the morning.
It's also a reminder that we always sometimes joke about it, but it's serious. Like, art means things. And we're in an era where even the space wizards and the superheroes and the comic books They mean things. And these are two people that I think have proven that with a wide body of work, but particularly the last couple projects. So, no, Joseph, I share your excitement. I only express a little cynicism to just wake me up when it hits the theaters. It's where yep. I sometimes fall down on all the news. But that's sometimes the cynicism wins. But I think there's a lot of reasons to be excited. And these are two names that have a lot of respect right now. So that's yeah. great.
And I will throw out there as my final thought that even with all the big ideas that I think they might be interested in, their work that I'm familiar with has still been fun and pulpy and thrilling and having a sense of humor. So I don't think those things are by the wayside.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, don't forget, Lindelof wrote Cowboys and Aliens, one of the greatest movies of... Oh, no? Okay, no.
Yes.
Co-wrote. A movie I went to opening night because I was like, this is it. But no, I think The Watchmen it just by itself is a reason to get excited about what could be coming here. So we'll keep you updated as we look towards this secret Star Wars movie. I'm sure updates will pop up elsewhere. All right, let's get into some of the other news stories. One big one we're going to talk about. And then in the break, we're going to have a special this week in Star Wars history because it's a special week in Star Wars history. I'm titling this one, Correcting the Andor Numbers. So I'll summarize a little bit here. A lot of people probably know what was happening. Demand is the currency of the attention economy. Those are the words that greet you when you go to the website for Parrot Analytics. And over the last few years, the research numbers and insights from Parrot Analytics have found their way into many discussions around pop culture and content, including us here at Force Center. When they come out, we look. And I think as you should, it's a new era indeed. But to me, in today's attention economy, the numbers kind of quickly can fuel the hot take economy, which is another economy. But what if the numbers are wrong? Last week, it was announced by Brandon Katz of Parrot Analytics that Andor's demand numbers were lagging behind other Star Wars shows. There are admittedly a lot of factors in that, including some wizards and dragons flying around at the same time as this show, among other things. Let's not forget She-Hulk was going too. But that was the headline. That was the headline. Then Katz tweeted out a correction. He tweeted out and he took ownership, but the corrections are always quieter than the original ones, right? Saying he put in the wrong numbers. This is like a Google Sheet error. And though Andor is still technically behind the other shows, it has shown exceptional demand in some cases. Lots to talk about this, and this is also one of what I call those temperature check conversations where it keeps coming up, and it's time for us three to check our temperature on this conversation. So what are our overall thoughts on the conversation around Andor's numbers? Jen, we'll start with you here.
I think that Andor is such a fantastic show, and I worry when the focus is on how the show is performing in terms of other Star Wars shows. It suddenly dominates the conversation and it becomes, well, you know, this show is better than this show and Disney is ruining Star Wars and Star. I saw somebody was like, the Star Wars brand is dead. I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? Like, it just...
Jen said what while standing in a Build-A-Bear holding a Grogu? What?
Looking for a Darth Vader outfit for my Grogu. I'm like, I will not accept this. But, you know, it also makes me worry because I don't want creative decisions to be made because of these ridiculous numbers or when numbers are input incorrectly because, unfortunately, the main headline is the original one, like you said, not the corrected one, which landed much quieter. Yeah, so, yeah. You know, I don't think that will happen, but we can look at Solo and see. I mean, Solo did well, but it didn't do as well as everyone had predicted it would do. And therefore, the whole conversation is like Solo bombed, which it didn't bomb. And now we're not ever getting Alden Ehrenreich back as Han Solo. So, yeah. I don't like when the conversation. I know that it's a necessary part of our business, but I don't like when the conversation is around Andor's numbers.
Yeah, I agree with that there. Yeah, and Solo. Yeah, again, it just seems like not that the nuance is always tossed out, but just you know the remake, the reshoot money with Solo was part of the reason it didn't make money, and it still did certain well. We've had that 2018 conversation. But I agree with you there on that one. Then, Jen, Joseph, your opening salvo on the Andor numbers.
I'm going to talk twice as fast as normal to make up for all of my going on about the other news.
No, I love it.
No, my main, I really agree with Jennifer, and my main gut reaction is that social media misinformation of all kinds is a nightmare. It is a plague to our society that we must be on guard to hold back the darkness like Jedi. Is that too melodramatic? I feel very strongly about this.
In 2013, I would have been like, what are you talking about? Now I'm like, yes, I will join your army.
Yes, me too.
At least for me, anecdotally, and it's entirely anecdotal, but from looking under and or hashtags, looking on my own Facebook friends discussion, this idea that no one is watching Andor is all over social media. The incorrect genie is out of the bottle. Can it be put back in? I couldn't look up how many RTs retweets the original tweet got because he deleted it, which that's great to not have information out. But I could look up the correction. His correction has 79 retweets.
Right? My gosh.
And there are people who are at their normal human day jobs who don't listen to Star Wars podcasts, who just watch Star Wars, and they are sitting there thinking no one is watching Andor. That incorrect truth is out there, right? And then also, as we always talk about, it's just a really great we need to remember that Parrot Analytics is not solely viewership numbers. They're trying to be this new paradigm. I will quote again from their own help center, Parrot Analytics, what is demand? That's what their page is. Our system captures how much attention, engagement, desire, and viewership is expressed by consumers for content and talent all around the world. A graphic list, the kinds of things they measure are downloading streaming, photo sharing sites, video streaming sites, microblogging sites, wikis and informational sites, fan and critic rating sites, social media blogging sites. So the specific tweet was about their viewership, but remember Parrot Analytics is viewing, is rating overall engagement and demand, not just numbers of viewers. And I don't really doubt that Parrot Analytics numbers are good, but I think the question is, do we want an algorithm of specific types of internet engagement to be the measure of success?
Yeah, well said, Joseph, on the numbers and what it does and what it means and how, look, I'm fascinated by the numbers. I think something like this is, you know, is the word needed strong? But it's interesting where they're taking the numbers. It does mean something. We're going to talk about the relation to business, but like, it's weird that this one company, and I'm not saying they're like, oh, I don't trust this company, but I don't know. We grew up with Nielsen ratings and it's like, that was the standard and it has to change, but I'm with you in this. We have to be careful about it. And, I don't fully understand what are like all these sources that you're talking about. Like, what do they do with it? What numbers are they crunching? What does it come out? This is a weird sports reference, but like for years, there's still something called the NFL quarterback rating. And for years, the joke was, how do you figure it out? I don't know. No one could give you an answer. It was like this, that, minus that, divided by this, move this. And you got a rating and a rating that could, that was a judgment on your production skills and talent. And it was always like, well, what is it? And I don't know. It's the quarterback rating. And I feel very similar with this, where it's like, well, it's the Parrot Analytics. Well, okay, but what is it? You know, you're going to wikis and how many people are going to Andor wiki pages? Because it might be less because they're not looking up Grand Inquisitors, Invaders, and Kenobis and all those kind of things. They're looking up Tim Carlos, which we love, but it's obviously going to be a little different there. So it's not that I am not fascinated by the discussion, but it's I am troubled by the speed of misinformation, which is not new. That's not grand, insightful hot take. It's just something we've been dealing with. And what you're talking about, Joseph, is like, yeah, that becomes the conversation for the quote normies. And God, I'm jealous of normies who don't aren't in the Star Wars discourse bubble, because that does fuel the conversations. I hear that all the time. Well, I hear that this. Well, where'd you hear it from? A random retweet? Misinformation, wrong numbers put into a Google sheet, and it dominates the conversation. Always going to have the business. We're going to talk about our thoughts on the business. We are all creatives in Hollywood. We understand the numbers and the importance of it. It's always going to be that balance. And the business is always going to win over the art, right? But it just kind of, it sucks. It hurts when you see this conversation and it turned out it was a oops, mea culpa, my bad. You know, Jen?
Yeah.
Yes. I really get very frustrated because this show is a hit. Andor is a hit with critics and with fans. And I mean, The Mandalorian was a hit also as well. But, you know, the thing about Andor that is a little bit different is that it's not as memeable as, say, a Mandalorian with Grogu, with either Mando or Grogu. The both of them are very, very memeable. With the Book of Boba Fett, that was also kind of memeable. And there was also a lot of negative takes. And as we know, the algorithm on Twitter pushes all the negative takes up because that's what usually gets the most engagement and stuff like that. So that's kind of what's going to be driving that conversation. So I just, the problem with only looking at these parallel analytics numbers is that it doesn't take, doesn't factor in all the factors. When the show is airing, you know, what is the competition? Why a show is more talked about online, whether people are hating the show or people are loving the show. It doesn't take all these factors into consideration. And then that's where I get really frustrated because then creative decisions are made based on these numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I really agree. Ken, you had this great question in your notes about exactly what Jennifer is talking about, right? About the...
Yeah.
So even if the initial tweet was grossly incorrect about the viewership numbers, you know, it's still possibly a little bit lower in viewership and probably much lower in the kind of viral engagement that Jennifer is talking about, right?
Yeah.
And to me, I so agree with Jennifer. It makes sense that the viewership might be a little bit lower than Obi-Wan, Boba Fett, and Mandalorian. I know a lot of people in the... A lot of people are tired of some of the legacy characters, right? And that's some of the excitement about Andor. But name recognition is still powerful, right? For people to tune into Obi-Wan, Boba Fett, Mandalorian makes a lot of sense. Ken, as you noted at the top, there is a ton of competition that some of those shows didn't face between House of the Dragon, Rings of Power, She-Hulk, the general Halloween season where lots of people just prioritize watching spooky things. Network television kind of has a little bit of a fall schedule again, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of competition to actual viewership. There are people who have figured out, well, it's Andor is mostly an arc, so I'll wait, right?
Yes.
Ton of reasons that viewership might be down a little bit. And then I think Jennifer's just hitting the nail on the head about engagement, right? Mm-hmm. If some of what Parrot Analytics is measuring is just literal tweets, they are ranking thousands of people during Obi-Wan Kenobi just tweeting Anakin is back, OMG Hayden.
Yep.
As exactly. Engagement, right? And there are going to be more OMG Hayden tweets than OMG Tim Carlos socks tweets. You know, there is a reason that people would be engaging with Obi-Wan Boba Fett differently on social media, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and that's actually, yeah, absolutely where the conversation needed to go is were we surprised to hear that the stats might have been lagging? I'm talking about the first tweet. No, that made a lot of sense to me. All the reasons you both have talked about here. It's a crazy time. What a blessing of bounty of nerd content right now in this fall alone, let alone the last 5 to 10 years. I mean, you know, if you were a fan of all these properties or at least curious, you had this massive show, Rings of Power, whether you loved it or not. It was this big swing and a long, decades-long loved IP and world. You had the sequel to still one of the most watched and in-demand downloaded shows, Game of Thrones. You had the prequel sequel to it, which was going to get a lot of eyes. That's crazy to think. And then, yes, She-Hulk. MCU shows are still, you know, the MCU, oodles and so many fans, oodles of fans. It just was crazy. And then you have this show, it comes along. Yeah. The Tim Carlos Socks show again, listen to our databank dive released on Sunday for more on Tim Carlos Socks. And without a doubt, it was, from a popular movie, Rogue One, but Rogue One is never as popular as it has been. I've never heard people in general, this is a general statement, never heard people be like, oh, it's because of Andor, it's because of Jin. It's just kind of Rogue One that people love, which is great. I think it was designed to be an ensemble. So you have this series, then the series starts. I can't tell you how many people I've talked to who are friends of mine who are like, oh, yeah, I think that show should have been released in a package of 3 episodes. If that's the way they're going to do it, I'll wait. And I don't disagree with that take. You know, some of these episodes, the end, and we're all kind of like, give me more. And that can be frustrating and in a good way. So yeah, there's a lot of factors. We're not saying anything that I think other people aren't thinking. Did the correction, even with the switch, did it challenge anything you both thought initially, or could just kind of confirm some things? Jen, any thoughts to just the reaction? Did you gear shift yourself?
I mean, I was kind of surprised that the stats had been lagging, and then the correction, I was like, okay, well that makes more sense. But I did still take stock of what I've been seeing online. And it is true. Mm-hmm. I don't see as much and/or discussion happening online, even though it's overwhelmingly positive. And you know, my husband's mm-hmm. always like, what's your evidence? You know, have you conducted a study? No, I have not conducted a study. I don't have evidence. I only have my personal experience. And what I will say is from TikTok, mm-hmm. when I was doing Book of Boba Fett and Mandalorian TikTok videos, dissecting this character, how does it relate to the overall canon or blah, 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 mm-hmm. minute-long videos, whatever, I was getting really huge numbers. And I think it was because there was a lot of newer fans, a lot of younger fans who were getting in, being introduced to this lore through mm-hmm. The Mandalorian, through Grogu, and through Book of Boba Fett. I think now, and I mean, obviously there's lots of factors why my numbers are down.
Yeah.
We could go into a whole episode about that. But I do think that not as many younger fans might be watching Andor or kind of wanting to learn more about it. Mm. I almost feel like, and I've seen this from a few friends who are not, you know, huge Star Wars nerds or anything. They're like, I'm going to wait and watch the whole series at once. Mm. They're waiting because it is kind of almost like bite-sized pieces. I love it. I love what we're getting every week, but for some people, they want to be able just to binge the whole thing. So maybe at the end, we'll see more engagement. I don't know, but I can say that I have seen a major shift in discussion on TikTok. There's not as much discussion of Andor, and I'm not sure why.
Yeah, that's actually interesting to kind of pull back the curtain a little bit here. We've even noticed that Force Center, we usually get a larger bump for Kenobi, a Book of Boba Fett, Mando, right? You know, or some big breaking Star Wars news. Without a doubt, that makes sense. Our numbers are up with Andor. They're not as up. So that's why this initial tweet made some sense to me. The correction makes even more sense, where it's like, yes, no, it's showing exceptional demand. It's just also behind the previous shows because, as Joseph said, OMG Hayden. If you're going by all these metrics. So it does make sense. I've even heard some other folks who do more YouTube stuff, like you're talking, Jen, with TikTok and everything, where they're like, yeah, the watch-alongs and the reactions a little bit less. And I think that is part of the byproduct of having a quote, more adult Star Wars. I think a lot of that audience is not the ones rushing to Twitter to tweet OMG Tim Carlo. So it's just kind of the correction made some sense to me that, yeah. And I think going back to what Joseph was saying, too, is even if I go, it makes sense. It's lagging. I don't then turn that into a think piece on why Star Wars is dead and other people do. And that filters down to the office. That's where a lot of my frustrations lie.
Yeah. I mean, I think we talk often on 4Center about different opinions about how you state your opinion, right? I'm an advocate of let's try to state our opinions with subjective words. I understand if you're a professional critic and you're writing an essay with supported evidence, it's a stronger statement. I was taught to write that way, write declaratively, speak declaratively, because then you support it with evidence.
Yeah.
Obviously, people can choose to speak about things however they want to, and many people choose to state their opinions is hard facts. And that is, you know, what this person who works at Parrot Analytics did when posting those initial incorrect numbers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Said, Andor is overwhelmingly lower than Mandalorian, Book of Boba Fett, Obi-Wan, despite the fact that it is easily the best Star Wars series by far. So even the tweet that was presenting this information, which ended up being wrong, was encouraging.
Yes,
that kind of let's connect these numbers to quality.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
And that's a really interesting thing for us to have opinions about whether or not we want to do that. In terms of the engagement numbers, I really agree with both of you. But the thing that is perhaps revealing, perhaps unsettling, is asking myself how much of engagement is driven by anger or being challenged, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
obviously people have much longer emotional investments in Ahsoka popping up in Mandalorian season two, in Obi-Wan, in Boba Fett, in Grogu even at this point, right?
Yeah.
So there, this question is, did I, a Star Wars fan, have some investment in how are these characters going to be handled? What is their story going to be? Are they going to step on the lore of A New Hope? So I think people are engaging on social media by tweeting out frustrations.
Yeah. Yeah.
Going back and forth with one another. I think some of our, you know, the our Obi-Wan report coverage of the individual episodes doing more numbers than our Andor one, I think is sometimes driven out of, I think a lot of people who didn't like that particular episode of Obi-Wan are listening to see, like, is there a way in for me to like it, right? So there's this weird, that's frightening to me.
Yeah.
That things cannot be judged successful unless there's a strong agree, disagree conflict going on social media about it.
Yep.
But then buried within that is this positivity of like, well, maybe there isn't as much Andor engagement just because most people like it and there isn't a flame war.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
There's some, it's boring takes. Fine. There's some fighting over, you know, a lot of people complimenting Andor by being dismissive to the other Star Wars shows. So there's a little bit of heat. There's a little bit of friction. But for the most part, it's just like a conversation when you get together with friends and you have something that you're both really upset about, or you're both like, what's going on? Everything's great. Me too. Yeah, everything's great.
Yeah.
What should we talk about?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, yeah. It seems like the most, you know, hotly debated thing around Andor is how to love it. It seems to be like you're loving it wrong and you're loving it wrong. I think some people have some points about what other people do with the show, but I've actually pointed that out on his, I think that was an important part of the story. If even his tweet was like, it's clearly better. Well, to you, sport, not necessarily to other people.
To you, champ.
Yeah. Buddy.
Is that what you think, boss? All right.
Yeah. Get out of here, pal. Like even that, it's just like, just put your numbers in, man. Just put your numbers and leave your opinions out of it. Go start your micro blogging YouTube venture to get out of there. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I actually kind of forgot that. That rankled me. And it still rankles me, those kind of things. Which, by the way, it's the best to you. That's not the wrong answer, you know? I also had this discussion this week on a big House of Dragon thing that might have been tough to watch. And it's like, if it's tough to watch for you, that's the answer. Other people, it's not as tough, and other people need to see it. That's the answer for them. And that's sometimes where it's like, the numbers thing, it's weird. I think you're right too, Joseph, of just like one of the reasons the numbers are down. It is fascinating why we have this desire to be like, I hated it. And I must either tell people about that or figure out why, which actually is an honest pursuit. I actually appreciate that. We've had some people come to us and, you know, oh, thank you for your show. It helped me understand or appreciate Rise of Skywalker. I still don't love it as much as you all. And I still have a lot of issues with it, but I see things in it more than I didn't. That's why we're here. As well as just celebrating things, we're here to engage with what's presented by these pieces of art. But the numbers are always going to be a fascinating discussion. So as we start to wrap this up here, throw in any final thoughts you have. I think we've kind of answered this along the route, but I was going to ask, like, what is our current personal relationship? This is a temperature check with business and the creative sides of the industry. And how do we strike a balance? Do we just toss the numbers out? Do you believe the numbers? Where do you go? Even in your own work, Force Center, Star Wars, Jen, TikTok, where do you go with numbers?
Oh my gosh. You know, it reminds me of Yelp, because sometimes you can find a business and a lot of the people are complaining. And oftentimes people take time to write a complaint that they have, but they won't take time to share what they love or how great something was, right? So if people are enjoying Andor, like we're talking about, and, you know, like Joseph was saying in the conversation, yeah, it's great. Okay, what else do we talk about? I think I don't know what to think anymore, to be honest, because I'm all about sharing my enthusiasm. We're here to celebrate Star Wars. And if that's not, like, this is the best of the best. Come on. Like, how are we going to allow these silly numbers to say that this show is not phenomenal? Do you know what I mean? Like that, like, it takes away from the art of it. It takes away from why we love Star Wars, why we want to watch these TV shows, whether it's Game of Thrones, Rings of Power, whatever. it moves us. It makes us feel something. That's what art is. And if we're like, well, it doesn't fit with the numbers, I'm not gonna, that becomes so cold and analytic, and it's just not what art is about. And it worries me, especially in this day and age where shows get canceled so fast, like at least, you know, for the big networks, right? They just, because they're like, oh, there's no engagement. Oh, the numbers are low for the second week in a row. We're going to cancel this show and not show any more of the episodes. It worries me. I think we got to give, you know, these shows time to breathe. And I don't know. I don't know what to think, guys.
Yeah. Look, it's an era this could easily spin off into personal, you know, views on our own work, not just here at Force Center, but I think it's fascinating. And because it is a different era, this Parrot analytics thing is just the concept of it is fascinating to me, but it is a brave new world, which doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad new world. It's just a brave new world we have to navigate. But even the conversations, I've always believed you have to, you know, general audiences is where you're either going to make your money, you're going to succeed, and either, you know, as a stand-up, I know some jokes are for 5 people, and I hope other jokes are for 100, right? And you choose to do that. And if you hold on to just the 5-person jokes, you might not be as successful. Conan O'Brien's one of my favorite creators in the world. I still get grumpy when I hear his approach to The Tonight Show and how he was asked to change it, and he got so stubborn for the art, he lost the job. And I'm always like, but you weren't doing 1:30. You were doing 12:30. You're doing 11:30. So there's a business side that I do agree that needs to be taken care of. But we are in a different world where, you know, you almost have to, you know, we could easily do a reaction show channel where we just sit down in front of trailers and go, ooh, and get a lot more views. We choose to go a little deeper. We choose what we're going to talk about. Jen, you stumbled on. I wrote the book, Why We Love Star Wars. I almost owe money to my publisher for lack of people buying the book. If I wrote Why We Hate Star Wars, I'd be in a mansion. I'm sure of it. I'm sure of it. It's just where we are. Joseph, you know, you take us home here. You have been doing this for a long time. You know the battle, the struggle, ticket sales, and how that can translate to how people view your art. And it's part of it, and we're never going to shy away from it. We understand it. Fascinated by the numbers. But when you think about all this, where you go right now?
Yeah, I will go back to Sammy Davis Jr.
Oh, okay.
When I was very, very young, just starting out in doing creative endeavors, I read his later autobiography, Why Me? And he had a quote in there about talking with his uncle and his father, the Will Mastin Trio, where he started out in vaudeville and them teaching him, kid, it's show business. There's show and there's business. And I was like, that stuck with me. Yeah. And I have wrestled with that throughout my career doing theater. You can really feel the business, because if there aren't people in the theater while you're making your jokes, you feel that in your show. I deal with it in a different way right now. I'm actively pitching things in Hollywood, and I have heard, friends have heard, we love this idea. This is a great idea. We need something to make it safer. And that's always, I think, the way the industry has been on the business side is, what is our metric that is going to make us feel like we're going to make our money back because it's a business, you know? In older days, it might have been, you know, a specific star. And then it might have been in the early part of streaming, maybe it was, that's really going to drive subscription numbers. Now we're into, is that going to drive engagement? What does that mean? But I bet Parrot Analytics is getting to the point where if somebody can point to like, hey, I've got this star, this young star attached to my project. Look at this star's Parrot Analytics number. This star can't appear on screen without people tweeting and blogging up a storm. That is just the latest iteration of something that is going to make a business investment feel safer. Yeah. So for me, there's a part of it of like, as it has always been, so it shall be. It's a business. But then there's also like every time there is a kind of a change, you do have to think about what Frankenstein's monster might we be creating, right? Because I so agree with Jennifer. To me, it helps to separate the show and the business. The show should be about humanity. It should be a group of humans sharing a story that comes from their soul to see if it affects other people's souls, even franchise stuff. You know, we all have a relationship with Obi-Wan, but what of Ewan's soul is in that? What of Deborah Chow's soul is in that? What are they? I've felt this, says Deborah Chow. I'm trying to put it on screen. Do you feel that too? Does it make us connect? That's what a story is. And stories have to get through the business in order to make that connection, right? Stories are not products, but in order to reach a lot of people, they have to be sold like products. So on one hand, it's, yep, this is the way it's always been. But the thing about the Parrot analytics that's intriguing to me is social media engagement the way we want to measure value? Because I think we're in this moment right now where it's really helpful to remember that streaming services are changing what they want. They used to want subscriber numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Netflix just announced, we're not even going to report on that anymore. They're announcing ad-based tiers almost every social media. So are we back to viewing numbers? Is it merch sales? Is it winning awards? Is it building brand loyalty? I think some of the streaming services don't know what metric they're going to use to tell their investors we're kicking ass right now.
Yep.
So then Parrot Analytics slips in, and they, I think, are accurately reporting the numbers, but are those the numbers we want to use? And I will close my rant by just reminding people of Morbin Time. If people don't know about Morbin Time, do you guys know about Morbin Time?
Yes, but please.
So the Jared Leto Spider-Man spinoff Morbius came out. It was disliked and it did not do well at the box office. I don't know the entire history of the meme, but a meme got going that in the film, or maybe in a sequel, Morbius was going to say, it's Morbin time. It was a joke that exploded on social media.
Oh my gosh.
I think perhaps reacting to Parrot Analytics or something like Parrot Analytics, I admit I don't know the full story. Sony re-released it and it bombed again.
Oh my gosh.
But now it's on Netflix and it's doing great.
Because
it's not because it's a story that connects to people's soul and they're deeply moved by Morbin. It's a fun pop culture punching bag. And analysis like Parrot Analytics is reflecting that there's something powerful about Morbius, but it's not capturing that. Here's a story full of soul that is connecting to people's souls. There's something else going on. It's fun. Mm-hmm. The joke of it is fun, but is that what we want to make?
The Frankenstein monster of all. I love that take on it. You got this. You got these re-releases. You got people taping themselves in theaters reacting to end credit scenes, and that's all the conversation I saw this week. And how about the content? That's a different discussion. I think all three of us have some passionate investment in this conversation. I think more than I even thought. I was just like, yeah, here we go again. But yeah, look, I'm someone who's had to shut down many projects because ain't nobody watching. And that sucks. And it sucks when I feel I'm doing some of my best work, but no one's watching. You have to be aware of it. But I really agree with the bigger conversation, especially that thing you said, Joseph. These streaming services, I don't even think they know what the measure is. And that's why a company like this emerges and suddenly it's treated as cold, hard truth. When maybe it isn't. It's only part of the story. But what remains is this: Andor, pretty darn good. And we'll keep breaking it down. Episode 8 coming this week. All right, we are going to take a quick break. On the other side, no news. It is this week in Star Wars history because, oh my, this is a big week in Star Wars history. But before we do that, we're going to have a Force Center Recommends, an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Joseph, what do you have?
Force Center listeners, say it with me. It's Padawan by Kirsten White. Perhaps the book that we have been promoting the longest because we are so behind on reading it ourselves. But of course, if you'd like to listen, you can get this great audiobook.
You can get this great audiobook by going to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Get your free audiobook today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. I've gone as far as to move it into my bedroom and put it next to my bed. Grace is out of town for about 3-4 days, which means I get about an extra half hour sleep in the morning because usually I have to wake up first and feed the dogs, all that stuff. I can do that. I was like, I'm going to do it. Today? No, I almost didn't make it to Force Center on time. All right, we're going to get to it. No reading here. Quick break on the other side this week in Star Wars history.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of awesome what-ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why UnitedHealthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at UH1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Welcome back to, I almost said Star Wars Rank for some reason, because my mind is just befuddled and confused, all these numbers talks here. Now, this is Force Center, the big show, the main show, the superstar destroyer of our fleet, looking at Star Wars news and breaking up a little bit different this week, because I remember earlier in the year, Joseph, I think we even kind of put it on our brains. We're like, oh, we should do an episode about this. And time has moved so fast. I got the old Star Wars app out and did my This Day in History. I was like, oh bleep, that's this week. Totally forgot. So this might be the first of a few times we discuss it here. I got some questions coming up about it too. On October 30th, 2012, it was a quiet, ordinary day when suddenly news broke that the Walt Disney Company had reached an agreement to acquire Lucasfilm. Drop your phones. What is going along? Along with that announcement came the additional news that new Star Wars movies would be coming our way. Oh, my God. We got new Star Wars content. 10 years ago, the Star Wars world changed forever. Let's look back at this momentous occasion when I spent a little more time discussing this. First, I want to set the scene. Oh, we do that on our Andor reports and Kenobi reports. Set the scene. How are you watching this? Well, how did you take in this news? Jen, I didn't know you then. Where were you when you heard this news?
I was on Twitter. And I had to make sure that it was verified because I was like, what?
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I had gone to Star Wars Celebration that year in Florida. And so this was a few months after that, or several months, I can't remember. And so I was still on that high of being around Star Wars fans. And this just was like an explosion of just, oh my gosh, we're going to get even more Star Wars stuff. Incredible. So yes, I was on Twitter that day.
Yeah. Twitter indeed. Joseph, I had not gotten the pleasure of meeting you yet. Still 2 years away from that. But this announcement kind of has something to do with that. So where were you?
Yeah, yeah. I hadn't met Jennifer, but I think I saw Jennifer on a panel that Bonnie Burton did at San Diego Comic Con in like 2011.
There you
oh
go.
Gosh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. And I believe the Death Star dress. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was on Twitter as well. This is a great joke that I'm sure other people have made, but I've certainly made multiple times of like, you know, you used to, you know, ask your older relatives, where were you when X happened? They'd be all these varied things and almost the rest of history. Where were you? Oh, I was on Twitter.
Right.
But I was sitting in my living room in my house at the time in South Minneapolis, probably trying to get some writing done, but also just messing around on Twitter because I was super active on Twitter at the time. And I was sitting in a very specific chair. It was a chair that we had bought to be a Santa Claus's chair for a theater show. And wow. Then it just became part of our living room. We brought it here to Los Angeles. And then in our recent remodel, we were going to get rid of it. And then I was kind of feeling bad about it. And then I remembered, that's the chair I was sitting in. I found out Lucas sold to Disney. And I just said to Sarah, like, I can't. It's got to go in the storage room. I can't get rid of the chair. That's the Star Wars chair.
It belongs in a museum.
Exactly. So that's literally physically where I was.
Wow. Yeah, for me, 2012, I was working at the time, the assistant director of public safety at the Northridge Mall. I was sitting in my office. I remember the dumb polo shirt I was wearing and the pants, the sensible work pants I had on. I remember it all. And yeah, on Twitter too, because it was definitely a different time for Twitter. Good, bad, and otherwise. It was a different time. And I just had it up on my screen. And I had been a month in. I was only a couple weeks into producing the Schmoes Know Movie Show podcast for my pals, Christian and Mark. And we had, I want to say it was a Thursday. I'll have to double check. I think it was a Thursday. Can Google Calendar have me go back that fast, that quick? I don't know. The reason I say this is that night, our guest on the show was my friend Matt Mercer. This is a couple years before Critical Role was Critical Role, but Matt was coming in, Tiffany Smith, the co-host with us, and we had a whole bunch of conversation planned. And I remember I had to send some furious texts. We have to talk about Star Wars now. And not only is the excitement what you guys are both describing of, I couldn't believe it, popped up on Twitter, and I was like, wait, what is going on? One of the reasons was in 2011 or so, I had this silly idea to write like a Star Wars spec script. This is when I was really still focusing on screenplay writing. And one of my friends was like, why? They'll never make more. And I went, you're right. And by the way, that idea would not have worked. And I'm glad I'm not writing Star Wars. But that was part of it. Of like, but I was told they'll never make more. I've told it was done and it's not done. And it felt amazing. But also the reason I mentioned the podcast producing story thing is that I think it changed from then on, like the news conversations, the breaking down the news and having giant news to talk about and speculation all began that night or that week, at least on our show as well, and changed kind of my career trajectory. And, you know, my interests have changed and waned over the years in discussing that kind of stuff. But it all was kind of wrapped up. That's kind of the memory for me.
Yep.
And I think I just started to see this. Jennifer Landa had YouTube videos. I think first time I remember you interviewed a young girl. Do you remember that one, Jen?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Darth Saraya.
Yes.
Who,
pledged to the Sith, right? At Disneyland or something.
Yeah, to Darth Vader. She bowed down to him, which at that time was like, what? This kid is doing that? It was quite a moment. She was great.
I love that there. We've all kind of gone over our initial emotions, thoughts, and hopes and fears, but let's get a little bit specific. As the rush of emotions subsided and actually the conversation and wondering about movies and hopes and, oh my God, because I remember even that day, someone in my office was like, but you don't want Disney to buy it. Look what they did to Marvel. And I'm like, yeah, look what they did to Marvel. I do want that. I do want that. Jen, where does your heart go?
You know, I remember being ecstatic because when I was a kid, I actually thought that Star Wars was a part of Disney because of Star Tours. And also they had a big presence. You know, they had Star Wars weekends at Disneyland. They also had the Jedi Training Academy, which is where Darth Saraya pledged to bow down to Darth Vader. And that was in 2011 that they had the Jedi Training Academy. So Star Wars and Disney were very much hand in hand. And I just felt like, oh, thank goodness, we're going to be all right. Mm-hmm. They're gonna take care of the fans. They're gonna know how to tell great stories. And I was nothing but optimistic at that time. I was so excited.
Mm.
And I still am.
Yeah, no, still am. And there's always going to be hits, misses, and swings, and all that kind of stuff. We're going to talk about that in a second. Joseph, while you're sitting on that that old Santa rocking chair, what were you thinking?
I think I literally sank into the chair, and the news kind of sank in. Mm-hmm. I looked it up. It was a Tuesday.
It was a Tuesday. Okay, that would make sense.
Yeah. An even more basic day than Thursday, right? Mm-hmm. Tuesday. What happens on a Tuesday?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was thrilled. I was more critical of the prequels at that time. Like I still had the things that I loved, but I hadn't kind of let myself fully embrace the fact that, hey, you love this large percentage of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why are you still holding yourself back from just letting yourself love them in total?
Mm.
So I had really thought, like, I know the Clone Wars was going. I had a bad experience with the movie in the theater, which I love now in the context of the whole show. Clone Wars was running, but I wasn't watching it. Star Wars was really only a part of my life from rewatching movies every once in a while and making jokes about it, you know, on social media and in stand-up. And I really thought it was done, like you, Ken. Mm. But I had this thought, and I think I had this conversation with people of, like, I wonder what Lucas is going to put in his will of... Is that just going to be done and sealed, or is he going to allow other people to play in his amazing sandbox when he's gone? I don't know why I was obsessed with that's the only way it could happen.
Lucas must die.
Yeah.
Well, because he gave those interviews in 2005 of, like, I did it. It's done. I finished the story, right? When Revenge of the Sith came out. And then you heard about the live action television show. And I know for people who are all in the Clone Wars, Star Wars was more alive than ever. Yeah. And I wish I had been there with you, but I wasn't at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So this was like, I thought this couldn't happen. So there was that thrill. And then just to remind myself, I looked up the actual press release. And it said, Miss Kennedy will serve as an executive producer on new Star Wars feature films, with George Lucas serving as creative consultant. Star Wars Episode 7 is targeted for release in 2015, with more feature films expected to continue the Star Wars saga and grow the franchise well into the future. They announced Episode 7. They didn't announce, they did not confirm in any way that the big three were back, right?
Right.
But we all thought they were, right? Mm-hmm. And there, I think there'd been rumors and rumblings. Yeah. So a big part of that was, I am I going to see Luke, Leia, and Han on screen again? So, like, I had this deep emotional reaction, but I was also so obsessed with Twitter and just making jokes. I tweeted a bunch of jokes, and I used the Twitter advanced search to look up my tweets.
Oh, no.
Some of them I'm not particularly proud of, but two I wanted to share because they're funny in context. One, I tweeted, I like it when people preface their Star Wars opinion with "for the record," just in case they have to testify in front of Congress someday. That one came back to haunt me. Now I'm still talking about it. And then this one's, I tweeted, I believe it was Samuel Johnson, the 18th century English author, who said, when a man is tired of Star Wars, he is tired of the internet. Which has remained prophetic. So, yeah, I needed to make my snarky jokes on Twitter, but I was over the moon.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things, too, talking about hopes and fears and everything. I think I had that, like, there's no way Harrison's coming back thought, right? And and that remains one of the biggest, you know, kind of surprises, but just kind of like joys for me that, oh, all right, no, he actually did. And we got that in some way. We'll talk about that more specifically. Yeah, with you on that. And I think also there was an era began where it's like, I was with you too, Joseph. Star Wars meant everything to me, as it did you, Jen. But it was like, it wasn't, I didn't talk about it every day. I had maybe a figure up here and there. I didn't own, I think I had one t-shirt, a Princess Leia t-shirt that didn't fit anymore and was yellow when it was supposed to be white. I didn't have anything. And even though I started getting into the podcast game with the Schmoes and everything like that, talking about movies, it was movies, not specifically the nerd stuff, the geek stuff. And this helped launch that, as I mentioned up top, changing the trajectory of things I did. But that was part of the excitement, too. So I wasn't as worried of what was going to come. It's just like, it's coming, that we're going to have something. That's exciting. And something I didn't think would happen. If you could go back to that day and tell yourself one thing on that day, time travel, what, you know, all these emotions, all this disbelief, hopes, fears, if there's one thing you could say, either brace yourself for something or to stoke your excitements, Joseph, what would you time travel back and say?
I think I, you know, would quote Count Dooku of "This is just the beginning." I think just telling myself even vaguely about Force Center, that the general discussion realm is going to change the way you've been describing so well, Ken, but that Star Wars is going to be an even bigger part of your life, and you're going to have room to make jokes and have fun with it, but also to really dive into the ideas of that. There's going to be room and space and desire for people to dive deep into the heart of the thing. That I couldn't predict in that moment, and I'm so happy for.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I would tell myself that there's so much coming. Get ready, pace yourself. But also, this sounds serious, but I would tell myself, especially then, this isn't coming back just for you. And I think that took me a couple of years to understand and adjust to that. I was never, a gatekeeper or anything like that, but I could have been. I've always said I could have one wrong turn and I'm angry in a car, in 2012 or 13, and even 14. So I think that's one thing I would tell myself. This is for everyone, not just you. So Jen, any words of wisdom you'd give yourself there?
I would tell myself, keep making YouTube videos. Because the sequel trilogy and kind of like the angry discussion that started happening, it really kind of scared me away from YouTube and scared me from wanting to talk about Star Wars and celebrating Star Wars. And I think that's kind of sad, because now I'm trying to get back to it. And I think about all the time that I shrank away because I allowed that negativity and that vitriol to really just like make me feel like, well, I can't talk about this. I'm just going to, I don't feel comfortable putting myself out there. And we should never, ever do that. So that was a lesson for me and a lesson for all of you kids out there. Don't dull your shine.
Yeah, there you go. I love that. Never stop popping. All right. This could be a larger discussion. Maybe we will touch upon this again. But what have been some of your favorite creative wins during this last decade? Man, 10 years of this. Content emerges in 2014. Speculation began on this day. So what are some of your favorite creative wins that you think they've had, Jen?
Oh my gosh, Disney Plus. Disney Plus is a huge creative win. It changed everything. I love the sequel trilogy, but you know, we always wanted to get more stories, right? Beyond the heroes that we knew. And so, well, obviously we knew Boba Fett, but really exploring all these new stories, and it's just been incredible. It's so much Star Wars content I never imagined we would get.
Yeah, that's a good thought there, Joseph.
Oh, and one last thing I want to say is that I love that we've also gotten more diversity, both in front of and behind the camera, which is something that I really wanted and had hoped, and we've gotten it and we're getting it, and it's really, really exciting, and it's just opening the door for so many different types of creators.
Yeah, the paths always go forward, and the roads always need to widen, but we are a long way away from that black and white table read photo, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
A long way away. Joseph, some creative wins for you.
Yeah, I'm going to try to limit myself since I've been very passionate this episode. and this could be an incredibly long list. I really agree, obviously, with the diversity thing. I think that has great value for many reasons in the real world. But there's also a power to me that one of the core ideas of Star Wars is everyone matters. Everyone contributes. We are all connected. So to see that idea that is in the heart of the storytelling be reflected in who gets to be involved in the storytelling is really powerful to me. Along those lines, and because it's specificity to myself being lucky to get a different kind of representation, and I say that with the knowledge that I've always had a lot more representation in Star Wars than other people. But honestly, just middle-aged and older people matter. They've always been there in Star Wars from Obi-Wan, but Obi-Wan was the mentor. He was there introducing us to Luke, right? All these things. But just seeing middle-aged and older, Luke, Han, Leia, Lando, now seeing 50-year-old Obi-Wan in his own show. Luthen and Mothma being like, you know, two of the characters we're most invested in Andor. And, you know, for the limited, you know, social media engagement that we get, there's some social media stars. That idea that in Star Wars, that Star Wars is a coming of age story, but it's almost more just a constant evolution story that no matter what age you are, you're going through these challenges. That has been a huge creative win to me. And then I'm going to only say, share one other, and I'm going to highlight old Grogu.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was thinking about it with, I can't remember what, there was some other Grogu. My wife bought some Grogu stickers this week.
Yeah.
And it's just the Grogu theme of this episode of our podcast is strong, that attaches to the show and the business. You know what? Maybe Grogu is over-merchandised. Maybe he has been plastered on too many things for money. That's the business side. He wouldn't be selling if he wasn't an amazing creation. Yes. The character, the way that we invest in him, the phenomenal success of the artists who designed him, the puppeteers and the writers who give him life. Grogu is a phenomenal artistic, soulful success. And because of that, he can be merchandised mercilessly. Mm-hmm. But he's a creative success first. And I really want to highlight and celebrate Grogu.
Yay.
We would be remiss if we didn't do that there. For me, echo a lot of what you're all saying there, but I think specifically for me, I'll just say Rebels in general. It's the first thing out of the gate. I bumped up against it a little bit because of what I said earlier. This doesn't seem for me. And what emerged is not only a show that I think introduced Star Wars to so many people. You could say it was for a younger audience. It definitely was an animated show on, a Disney XD type of channel, whatever. Was it Disney XD, I think, in the beginning? So yes, you definitely were reminded, you know, you went to commercial breaks and they were like, Astro Blaster guns with real gel. And you're like, oh, yep, this is definitely targeted for younger people, though I do want one of those guns. It never talked down to its intended audience, and therefore it grew with its audience. It affected the rest of us. And I love the sequel trilogies. I love everything. Obviously, clearly, we celebrate it here. But I think Rebels did something pretty special. We felt that, Joseph, you and I sitting at that panel, the Mando panel, when a lot of that Rebels related news at Celebration dropped, and you just felt an entire room was like, "This was our Star Wars. This is why we're here." And that was, to me, the biggest creative win. On a smaller level, I always, you're talking about Grogu. I think Grogu's the king of it. I think the first one out of the gate for me was BB-8. And I think there was a lot of pressure on creating a new droid. You got R2 and 3PO running around, and we're going to kind of, you know, R2's taking a nap, right? And that kind of rubbed up against some people too the wrong way. BB-8 is in that trailer. He is, for the most part, practical, not always, but for the most part. With that thumbs up, man, we all just had a new space buddy. And I thought that was very key in one of the early creative wins today. I don't want to overlook you, BB-8.
That's great.
Plus, you were on oranges, so you got marketed too. A couple more questions here. Kind of a similar thing, but anything you were pleasantly surprised by, anything that you might have had cast a little dubious eye towards, and then it ended up working out and you liked what they put out there for you, Joseph?
Yeah, I mean, I think I kind of took your question is a little bit of not even necessarily a specific creation. For that, I would say Rebels for all the same reasons that you said that I wasn't sure about it. I felt like it was pushing pretty hard to be like, hey, if you like the original trilogy and not that prequel stuff, here you go. Mm. And then it you know, ended up being this great celebration of the entire storytelling time period, with bringing in a lot of elements from the Clone Wars. And I think one of the things that I was pleasantly surprised by is the prequels renaissance. And obviously some of that is just people our age reevaluating, people who grew up with it, coming of age. But the fact that the Disney era of Lucasfilm started off a little cautious about prequels, and then you get to Kenobi and it's full renaissance. So that I've been pleasantly surprised by. The novels, it really, because of Force Center, getting to dive deep into the novels and really feeling like they're all very different, but they all feel like Star Wars and there's great depth to them. That's been a huge win for me.
I love that, Jen. Quick thoughts on pleasant surprises.
I think the High Republic, even though I still have not dived into it, I think that that is a pleasant surprise, is that the books can take on a whole new life, because it was a big deal when they said that, you know, those books that were now legends are no longer quote unquote canon or whatever. And so a lot of people were worried about that. So seeing the High Republic really flourishing and the excitement around it, I think is a really pleasant surprise. And it makes me want to jump into it at some point.
Love that there. For me, the answer is pretty simple. Live action television.
yeah, right.
I was always like, no, no way. What are we going to Babylon 5 our way through Star Wars? No, Star Wars is on the big screen. Yeah, I know George wanted to try to do something, but it didn't work. You see, he couldn't do it. And then Game of Thrones comes along. That kind of changed my view on TV. And there's, believe me, that's not the only show. There was many shows before, but for me, that was with the show. And then it actually kind of created the standards higher. Well, come on, we can't really do that. And I, you know, Mando season one doesn't hit for me as strong as it does for others, but you know what? I loved it. And here we are, as I'm counting down the minutes to Andor episode 8 as we're recording. Yeah, I could say it's worked out pretty darn well. And I'm pleasantly surprised that I was wrong about the idea of Star Wars on the small screen in a live action form. So that's why I don't run things. Final moments here on this discussion. You know, again, something we could probably talk more in depth about. But anything, Jennifer, real quickly here, anything you wish you'd been done differently or handled better over the last 10 years?
The only thing would be the Kelly Marie Tran and John Boyega problems that happened online and the racism that they faced. I do wish that that would have been handled differently, but I think it wasn't just Lucasfilm. It was a lot of companies and studios that learned at their expense. And now going forward, obviously, studios have a different way of handling it. But I do feel for them, and I feel bad that they had to go through that.
Absolutely. I echo that. That was going to be kind of my answer too. And also maybe could they find a way to get ahead of the news cycle? Look at my cynicism towards some of the Lindelof news of just like, yeah, get ahead of it. But that's a different conversation. Joseph, for you.
You know, it would have been great to see the big three together in one scene of the sequels. Yep. It does not ruin the sequels for me, but I agree. It would have been really great to find a way, and I'm going to stop myself there.
Yes, that's it. We're going to wrap up our discussion because there's much more to discuss about this. 10 years. Can you believe it? 10 years, man. October 30th, 2012. We are out of here today. Here's where you can find us. We're on Twitter at 4Center Pod, Facebook page at 4Center Podcast. We are on Instagram and YouTube as well. We are found a lot of places, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. Just search. You'll find us. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/4Center. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/4Center. Follow me at Ken Napsok. Go to my website, kennapsok.com, for more information. Jen, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa. I'm also on TikTok at JenniferLanda1138. But right now I've been posting weekly Andor reviews on my YouTube channel, along with some other things at Jennifer, YouTube.com/JenniferLanda.
And Joseph, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media, not social media. I don't know what that is. On social media, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. And like Jennifer, I'm posting more on YouTube. So you can just go to YouTube and search for Joseph Scrimshaw.
That's it, my friends. We'll see you next week here on 4Center.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.